It's the Week in Review on the morning show for this 3rd of November. We're unpacking the week's news developments, beginning with the deadly Halloween Day terror attack in New York City. Joining us for the roundtable is Keen Winters. He's a small business owner from Schofield and the coordinator of Center Right Coalition of Wausau. Keen, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And Ed Filone is with us. He's an associate professor of law at Marquette University. Ed, welcome.
Good morning, Keen.
The Islamic State, in its weekly newsletter, claimed responsibility yesterday for the terror attack in New York. Authorities say the 29-year-old immigrant from Uzbekistan drove the truck into a crowd of people on a Manhattan bike path, killing 8 people and injuring 12. At this point, investigators believe Saifullo Saipov most likely acted alone when he planned and carried out Tuesday's attack. Keen, what is your reaction?
Well, I think he may have acted alone on this, but he's planned it for a long time. And I think we have to have some questions about what it means to be radicalized, because he certainly had some preconceived notions that allowed him to do this.
President Trump tweeted yesterday, Ed, that Saipov should get the death penalty. Ed, what do you make of that, of the criminal course of action here?
Well, I think it's very appropriate to proceed in the regular criminal process in this case, as opposed to doing something drastic like trying to use the Guantanamo Bay military trial system for a terrorist attack. I think that would cause a great deal of problems in the process, because that military tribunal process is untested and very cumbersome. But I think the real difficulty is that President Trump declared that the suspect should get the death penalty, and such a public declaration from the sitting president is going to make it very difficult to sit a jury. People will be questioned as to whether they were aware of the president's comment, whether they heard it, and if so, they will be excused from the jury pool because of the possible inability for them to judge fairly a suspect where the president of the United States has declared the death penalty should be imposed. So actually, the comments from President Trump make the prosecutor's job more difficult and were very unwise.
The president also tweeted Wednesday, the day after the attack, that Saipov entered the country through the diversity visa lottery program, which covers immigrants from countries with low rates of immigration into the U.S. And at a cabinet meeting, the president said it's time for the program to go. Let's take a listen.
Diversity lottery sounds nice. It's not nice. It's not good. It's not good. It hasn't been good. We've been against it. So we want to immediately work with Congress on the diversity lottery program, on terminating it, getting rid of it. We want a merit-based program where people come into our country based on merit.
So this program that allows people from countries that have low immigration to the U.S., there's still, though, a thorough background check system in place. Keen, what do you make of the president wanting to cancel this program?
Yeah, I think it's time to take a look at this program. Terrorists certainly are aware that they can use this as a route to get into the U.S. It's just like the refugee problem. The vetting, you know, you do win the green card in a lottery, and as long as you have what is allegedly a high school education, which could be easy to get or even falsify, it really is a hole in our immigration system, and I think it's probably time to shut it down. On the other side, it doesn't do a lot of wonderful good that's worth sticking our neck out for.
Ed Filone, is this a target after an attack, or is this program a problem?
I think you see in President Trump's blaming the diversity program for the terrorist attack, I think you see all the pathologies of Donald Trump on full display here. Number one, a failure to even understand the program. Despite its name, this was actually instituted as a primary vehicle to increase immigration from Ireland and, to a lesser extent, Italy. This was a bill pushed by Irish-American politicians. Some of the biggest, most influential politicians pushing it were Ronald Reagan, Tip O'Neill, and Ted Kennedy, all with Irish-American roots. And, in fact, in the first 2 years of the program, it was specifically written into the law as a means for the Irish to benefit. At that time, Irish people had a hard time immigrating to the U.S. because under family-based immigration, on recent family members who had come before, most of those visas were going to Latin Americans and Asians. The Irish didn't have a lot of family ties to the U.S., so this was created in order to allow them a legal means to come to the U.S. from Ireland. But then after the European Union came into being and the Irish were free to immigrate throughout Europe, the use of this by Irish dropped, and it became then a vehicle for other low immigration countries, mostly Africa, to get into the U.S. The diversity name was just tacked onto it for PR reasons. So the first thing is Donald Trump really doesn't understand the program and its roots, and the second thing is, of course, he sees the word diversity in the name, and this is like a red flag in front of a bull, and it's just an attack. Oh, well, we have a terrorist attack on U.S. soil by an immigrant. Let me go after something called diversity. It's really distracting, and it's not going to prevent lone wolf attacks in the U.S. It's not going to make us safer. It's not a program that brings in a lot of people. It's 50,000 a year. It really doesn't do a lot of harm. It doesn't do a lot of good. I'm not exactly in favor of keeping it. But at the same time, to blame it in some way, even incidentally, for a terrorist attack is just bizarre.
Let's bring in Jerry in Glendale. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, thank you very much. The emotional attack of President Trump on the U.S. justice system plays right into the hands of the overall plan, I believe, of the terrorists. They do not have any chance, and I don't think they have any expectation of being able to overthrow the U.S. government. However, the reactions exemplified by Trump basically create a process of undermining the very principles that we have developed in this country about the criminal justice system. Thank you.
Keen, what do you make of that, this emotional attack on the justice system undermining American democracy?
I don't know that it undermines American democracy. I think I agree with Ed. It certainly was unwise. You have to let prosecutors do their work. But I think we also have to rethink totally how we address the terrorism threat. And I think at many times we are too politically correct, and we're going to have to go about this as a war. We're going to have to profile behavior in the way that the Israelis do and not constantly mix that with profiling of race and the implications that go with it. So I think our justice system, but I understand the impulse. We want to be tough, but I don't think we've come up with some good solutions yet to be tough.
Jerry, thanks for the call. If you're joining us now, we are in the Week in Review with Keen Winters. He's a small business owner from Schofield and the coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. And Ed Vallone is here. He's an associate professor of law at Marquette University. You can join in the discussion at 800-642-1234. Your reaction to the Manhattan truck attack. And also moving on to tax code reform. Do you generally support or oppose the House Republicans' tax reform plan that came out yesterday? 800-642-1234. Ed, the president blamed Senator Chuck Schumer of New York for this program, and Trump tweeted that the diversity visa lottery program was a Chuck Schumer beauty. Schumer had introduced the bill in 1990 that helped create the program, and then in 2013 he was also part of a bipartisan group of lawmakers who sought to get rid of it. Schumer replied with a tweet of his own that said, "I guess it's not too soon to politicize a tragedy." He also said this on the Senate floor on Wednesday. Let's take a listen.
The contrast between President Bush's actions after 9/11 and President Trump's actions this morning could not be starker. Again, Mr. President, President Trump, where is your leadership?
So did this program have implications in this attack?
No, it didn't. And to blame Chuck Schumer again, the president views every newsworthy event as an opportunity to try and attack an opponent or perceived opponent. He tries to spin the narrative. He doesn't care about what the attack was or how we maybe could prevent this in the future, uncovering what happened. It's more about, hey, I have an opportunity here to attack New York State, to attack the concept of diversity. The diversity lottery, again, was included in the immigration laws as part of a compromise. Everyone got something they wanted, and there were groups who felt that most of the family-based immigration visas were going to Latin Americans and Asians, because if you're bringing in close relatives of recent immigrants, that predominantly benefits Latin America and Asian, because they've been the largest numbers of recent immigrants since about 1970. So there was a desire by some to say, well, let's come up with a vehicle that actually will provide visas for Europeans. And that was really the root of the diversity visa lottery, as a way for Europeans to get visas to come to the U.S. And Chuck Schumer had a minor role in that compromise, just like everyone in Congress did. It was a bipartisan compromise. And since then, he's been a critic of the program. So somehow to lay all of this at his feet is ridiculous.
Let's bring in Sue in Fish Creek. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My worry with Trump's knee-jerk reaction and focusing on, you know, terrorists that is being promoted from the outside, I have heard nothing about the Walmart in Colorado and the U.S. citizens who have created atrocities in our country, which, of course, for me goes to gun, you know, some kind of gun control. The big focus on this terrible thing that happened in New York has set aside the Walmart, Las Vegas, Orlando. He does nothing about these because it's U.S. citizens doing the perpetration of the crime.
Keene, what about furthering his own agenda?
Well, what I would say is we really haven't come up with some good solutions about this. And I think what I would say to the caller is those issues certainly deserve to be addressed. I think it's a disservice to mix and match those. So there are problems with domestic crimes that we have to address. There are problems with terrorism, and in particular what's highlighting this current terrorism episode is this use of vehicles on pedestrians, which really seems like it's such an easy thing to do for anyone, and creates a big vulnerability. And so we really need to work on how are we going to screen people, how are we going to profile people to catch this ahead, how are we going to harden areas that where we're going to have large gatherings to make sure that this doesn't happen. So we need to focus on that particular problem. We shouldn't necessarily mix that with a domestic shooting. That's an entirely different issue. Both deserve to be addressed.
We are reflecting on the week's developments on this Week in Review. Our roundtable guests, Keene Winters, is here. He is a small business owner from Schofield and coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of WASA. And Ed Filone is here. He's an associate professor of law at Marquette University. You can join in, 800-642-1234. What do you make of the Republicans' $1.5 trillion rewrite of the American tax code? How will the tax overhaul impact your family? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back in a moment here on Week in Review. Thank you. We're discussing the top state and national political stories during this November 3rd installment of Week in Review. With us are Ed Filone, an associate professor of law at Marquette University, and Keen Winters, a small business owner from Schofield, coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you generally support or oppose the House Republicans' tax reform plan? Should Wisconsin undo its moratorium on sulfide mining, or is it necessary to protect the environment? Join into this roundtable at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So House Republicans unveiled this much-anticipated bill. It got held off to Thursday, the release on revamping the nation's tax code. We can't cover every single detail, but a few highlights. The corporate tax rate would be go from 35% to 20%. There would be four tax brackets instead of the current seven, and the standard deduction would be nearly doubled, and the child tax credit would rise by $600. The deduction for state income taxes would be eliminated. Property tax deduction would be capped at $10,000. So, Keen Winters, where do you feel Republicans are going with this tax code, and how does it settle for you?
Well, I think it's a step in the right direction. Nothing is perfect, but really like the doubling of the standard deduction, and that creates simplification. That will cover a lot of the loss of the individual deductions and create a simpler code. It's too complex right now. That takes a lot of time and money for people to do their taxes. I think we need to get our corporate rate to be the same as the rest of the industrial world. Corporations really don't pay taxes. It's really an added cost to their product line. And so those are really important steps. Now everybody's going to come out and complain about the loss of this deduction and that deduction. And look, if we got to take a step like this, if we're ever going to get our tax code simplified, which everybody agrees we should do, and there's going to be some winners and losers, but I think on balance, the middle class is going to do very well, and I think we're going to set ourselves up for greater job creation.
Ed, as Keen says, nothing is perfect. There will always be winners and losers. What stands out to you about these tax cuts? Who are the winners and losers to you?
Yeah, I'm going to answer that in 1 second, but first I just want to touch on the last caller. I think Keen made a response about we need to focus on violent acts, which are too easy to commit. And, of course, it's incredibly easy to buy a gun, a semi-automatic weapon with a bump stock in the United States and commit mass violence. So use of the word terrorism to label one attack versus another is just a way of diverting us from things we can do. In terms of the tax code, this really is a bill that's not reform of the system. It's just tax cuts. It's just trying to give money to people. So, of course, we're increasing $1.5 trillion to an already huge deficit and really just, you know, spending money and giving the bill to our kids on an outrageous scale for political purposes. And that's a shame. The impact on the middle class versus the rich, well, the rich definitely win. Some middle class get a modest tax break under this, and some middle class will end up paying more. In the near term, because of various exemptions and deductions that are capped or eliminated, some middle class residents of blue states, California, New Jersey, New York, especially where real estate is expensive and state taxes are high, will actually see a tax increase. And also because many of these benefits for the middle class phase out after 5 years, a larger segment of the middle class will actually see taxes go up, not in the first year or two, but later after everyone's kind of forgotten what's happened here. The real winner, though, and two-thirds of the benefits go to corporations and businesses, and there it's a huge tax cut for business. So in order to fund the tax cut for business, we're actually giving small cuts to some middle-class individuals, but actually raising taxes on others so people pay for the corporate tax cuts.
Let's bring in Nate in Milwaukee on this. Hi, Nate.
Hey. Hi, thank you. I was going to say that I don't think we'll get that much job creation. Didn't happen last time there was a big tax cut. But I remember I was thinking of the good old days when Paul Ryan claimed he was concerned about the deficit. And I guess that was only when a Democrat was president. So this is something that would also land on Wisconsin in particular, because we actually have to have property taxes to have, like, the roads get plowed during winter and things like that. So as a state, we're probably not going to do too well. And if I can apologize just for one thing, I know there's a lighter topic, and I was just going to say that when people think Ukraine, that's a Putin ally that somebody in particular was working for.
Okay. And so, Nate, and we are talking here about the tax plan overhaul. Keene, will this create jobs? Will we see jobs with this corporate tax rate cut?
I certainly believe so. The Reagan tax cuts created jobs. The Kennedy tax cuts created jobs. So there's a history of doing this. But also creating a climate where we can compete with other countries is really important now that the economy is a bit more globalized than it was. We can't really just go our own way and do our own thing in the U.S. like we used to. If the rest of the world is going to have a 20-22%, at least developed world, corporate tax, we really need to be in that mix in order to be competitive.
Yeah, but if I mean, the word competitive in terms of the global economy, what does that mean? I mean, to have any meaning, if the U.S. business is, you know, business community is going to be competitive, that should mean that it results in a higher standard of living for people in the U.S. If that just means that the owners of these corporations are able to keep more profits in their pockets, and with the elimination of the estate tax, just pass more of those profits on to their children, this idea of competitiveness doesn't translate at all into a better standard of living for the rest of us.
And speaking of children, Dave in Madison is looking at future generations here. Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about how the new tax plan removes the estate tax, which, you know, affects millionaires and billionaires. But they didn't do anything for children who inherit IRAs or 401ks. That'll be taxed as ordinary income. But Donald Trump Jr.'s inheritance won't be taxed for the capital gains. That doesn't seem fair to me.
Ed, I'm going to have you field that there.
I think you know, the estate tax is something that the extremely wealthy have long focused on, and it really only hits a very small number of Americans. I mean, you can pass up to $5.5 million onto your heirs without paying the estate tax under current law, and you know, most of us don't have $5.5 million to pass on to their heirs. So you're talking about a very small, select group of individuals, but they've managed to convince a large number of low-income Americans that there's something evil or wrong about this provision. And it's another example where the devil is in the details. If you're absolutely committed to ending the estate tax, then you're going to have to replace that revenue somewhere else, and that creates a real hole. And you have to raise the revenue by reducing deductions and exemptions that maybe benefit lower-income people. If you don't eliminate the estate tax, then there's that revenue that's available, and you don't have to eliminate or cap, say, the mortgage interest deduction. So it really is a very guided policy choice, in my opinion.
Dave, thanks for the call. Let's bring in Anne in Green Bay on this. Hi, Anne.
Hello. Well, Keene, you talked about bringing the tax rate for corporations down more to what it is in the other industrialized countries. But do other industrialized countries have as many churches and nonprofits that are tax exempt as we do? And how is that money going to be made up?
Yeah, Keen, go ahead.
Well, I don't know. You know, in many countries, for example, in Europe, churches actually receive government support. So I don't know how we realize the nonprofit I think they you're looking at doubling the standard deduction. And that, look, you used to have, you've got nonprofit deduction, property tax deduction. If you double the standard deduction for the vast majority of people who are itemizing, you're gonna cover everything. And for those people who weren't, they're probably at this stage falling into the alternative minimum tax. And so the doubling of the deduction washes the standard deduction washes away and subsumes a lot of the individual deductions. So I think that's an important step towards simplification, and it's going to cover a lot more than people think it will. In addition to that, I think we're really going to get a stimulus we're not just going to hog the profits. You're going to get a stimulus effect from having a lower corporate rate. And I think, too, the characterization that's been made of the inheritance tax, that it only affects millionaires and billionaires. Look, well, if you're a billionaire, you're going to have a corporation or an LLC or a trust. You're not worried about the alternative minimum tax. What it really affects is people who might be farmers in Wisconsin. And farms are a lot bigger than they used to be, where they have land. It's going to affect people who are really what you would think as small business people. They may employ 100 employees here or there in one or two locations. Those are the people that are sort of in this middle that really get hit, and they can't pass the business on in a working order. The business has to be sold. So, look, if you've got $1 billion, you're not worried about the inheritance tax. You're not going to pay it. There are other ways around it. It's these small family corporations that may employ 100 or 200 people that are getting hammered, and we need to do something about that so that they can still remain viable going into the future.
Ed Falone, President Trump said Tuesday he wants the House to pass this bill by Thanksgiving and have it end up on his desk by Christmas, calling it a big, beautiful present. Is that realistic?
Well, a lot of things would have to go right for that to happen. Even the numbers we're talking about and the details we're talking about, would exemptions be permanent? Would they phase out after 5 years? What are the specific income levels for different tax rates? All of these details are subject to change. This is sort of the initial iteration, and now the lobbyists start attacking, and they'll be swapping provisions and making deals, and it'll change and evolve. Right now you have opposition to the bill from the National Home Builders Association and Realtors organizations because of its potential impact on high-end real estate. You've got opposition from even Republicans in high-tax states on both coasts, California, New York, New Jersey. You've got opposition from the deficit hawks, who are appalled at this giveaway of money without any additional revenues coming in. You've got opposition from small business owners who, quite frankly, see the major multinational corporations really doing well. Most of the benefit to small businesses comes through a very complicated, not simplified, very complicated change to the pass-through taxation rules for partnerships, S-corps, and LLCs. And small business owners are saying this is just more headache than it's worth. So with all this opposition, very short time frame, a lot of moving parts, I think a lot has to break right for this to get on the president's desk by Christmas.
Well, let's move on from the tax overhaul to another announcement this week that former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and his associate Rick Gates were charged in the special counsel investigation of possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. They're accused of money laundering and other financial crimes. And meanwhile, a campaign advisor, George Papadopoulos, pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI when asked about Russia contacts. Ed, where do you see that the Mueller investigation is at here at the beginning of November, November 3rd?
Well, I think the investigation has made a great deal of progress. We have to remember it's been 5 months only. I used to do white-collar crime defense work, representing corporations and grand jury investigations, and, you know, investigations against our clients would last years. So we're still in early stages. But right now, I'm very impressed with the progress Mueller has made. I've never been one of those people screaming collusion, but Mueller has established that an offer was made. The Russians had offered to provide the Trump campaign with hacked emails from the Democratic National Committee at a time when it was not public knowledge that the hack had occurred. And individuals within the Trump campaign, Papadopoulos and others, have admitted that Russians contacted the campaign and made the offer to share these hacked emails. So we have the offer. The only thing Mueller does not have right now is the acceptance. But he's circling around Manafort and Gates, the indictment against them, the bank fraud, money laundering charges under the federal sentencing guidelines would call for a minimum 12 years in prison, as I calculate. That means that if convicted, they would probably not end up in a club fed or minimum security prison. They'd end up in a maximum security federal prison. That will really put pressure on them to cooperate. Flynn, we still haven't heard anything about. It's expected he'll get indicted on similar charges. And the pressure, the vice, is going to begin to have them turn and give evidence as to the acceptance part. Did anyone in the Trump campaign say, yes, we want this information from the Russian government? And, you know, collusion itself is not a crime, but certainly providing something of value, if you're a foreign national, providing something of value to a political campaign in the U.S. is illegal. And also you have all the various obstruction of justice charges as people have tried to hide their tracks, lie about these communications and destroy evidence or try to influence other people to testify falsely. So I would have to say at this stage, defense counsel for Donald Trump and other administration officials have to be pretty nervous.
Keen, in light of the indictments, Democrats are warning the president not to fire Special Counsel Robert Mueller. They're also urging him not to issue any pardons. What do you make of how the president is handling the Mueller probe?
Well, I think so far he's been reasonably cool on the Mueller probe. I liken it very much to the John Doe investigations here in Wisconsin. They were tactical. They were designed to smear and look. We all know the old adage: I can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. Yeah. And so once you get a grand jury impaneled, you can do all sorts of things. So there were individual citizens up here in central Wisconsin who got served no-knock warrants. The power of the government to intimidate, to coerce, to particularly bank. You know, Paul Manafort, whether he wins or loses, is never going to get his money back that he spends on his defense. It's going to cripple him. It's terrible that this kind of thing happens to ordinary citizens when there's really nothing there other than a democratic fantasy that Trump was installed by the Russians.
And we're going to have to leave this part of the segment there. This is the Week in Review here on The Morning Show. We're looking at top state and national stories that held our attention this week, moving through the developments with Ed Filone, an associate professor of law at Marquette University, and Keen Winters, a small business owner from Schofield and the coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of WASA. Here in Wisconsin on the home front, what do you make of the assembly rolling back the sulfide mining moratorium? What about loosening age restrictions on mentored hunting? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll return shortly for more Week in Review. We are examining the week's developments here in Wisconsin and nationally, where it's been a pretty busy week at the Wisconsin State Capitol. Keene Winters is a small business owner from Schofield, coordinator of Center-Right Coalition of Wausau. And Ed Filone is here, an associate professor of law at Marquette University. You can join the conversation, 800-642-1234. Should Wisconsin undo its moratorium on sulfide mining, or is it necessary to protect the environment? And what about mentored hunting? How do you feel about what changes are coming for what children can do on a hunt? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. So looking here at Wisconsin, there was a bit of action in the state assembly yesterday. We're going to talk about a couple pieces of legislation that were voted on. Republicans approved a bill that would undo the 19-year-old moratorium on sulfide mining. The vote last night was 53-38 for Republicans across joining all Democrats in opposition. Currently, mining companies have to prove a similar mine operated in North America for 10 years without polluting. They must also show that a similar mine has been closed for at least a decade without polluting. And this bill now goes to the Senate on Tuesday. Ed, what do you make of undoing this moratorium?
Well, I think it's unwise. You know, mining can have some very serious effects on the environment. You know, it's a beautiful state we live in. Wausau area is beautiful. Further north is beautiful. The problem with mining, in particular, certain minerals like gold, is that the process of bringing the ore from down below up to the surface, it brings it into contact with the atmosphere, with oxygen, with moisture, and that instigates a chemical reaction that releases chemicals like arsenic and sulfuric acid that leaches into the soil and the groundwater. So the very process of mining exposes our water and our soil to these contaminants. And I'm not sure why it's really necessary to lift the moratorium. The idea that this is going to create jobs, I think, is misguided. I think if you want to get jobs out to the north of our state into rural areas, number one, you should improve our transportation network and make sure our roads and means of transportation are adequate. That's going to help businesses locate outside of the urban areas. And number two, I think you need to support high-growth industries in the state that will attract college graduates to stay in our state and not leave and help improve our economy and our knowledge base. And mining jobs are not going to do that. I don't think college grads are going to go into the pit mine. So I think it's really a misguided approach if what you really want is economic growth and if you want a safe environment.
Keene, will this be an economic boon for northern Wisconsin?
I think it is an economic boon for northern Wisconsin, and I think we have a success in terms of looking at the mine at Ladysmith, the Flambeau mine, which was opened and closed and has been restored, and everybody in that area will tell you it was a success. We also have the fact that other states are doing the mines. So if you go across the Menominee River from Wausaukee, Wisconsin, you're going to find a sulfur gold mine that Michigan is allowing, which strikes me as really, really close to the river, and I wouldn't necessarily want it there. But look, we're a society that uses
the Back 40 mine.
Yes, that uses minerals. We should try and extract them in Wisconsin and do the best that we can to make sure that the environment is protected. And we shouldn't be kicking the ball to someplace else, particularly third world countries, to get these minerals where the environment we know isn't going to be protected. We should do it here, and we should do it a good job of it here. And I think we can.
Well, going back to 1998, Ed Filone, Governor Walker then supported the moratorium. When this arrives at his desk, we don't actually know what the Senate will do, but is this an about-face for the governor?
Well, yes, but, I mean, he's running for re-election, and his only possible campaign promise is that he somehow has created jobs and improved the economy. After all, this was the candidate who promised however many hundreds of thousands of new jobs and fell woefully short and has mismanaged our state's economy. So anything that he can try to spin as a win for workers and put the lipstick on the pig, even if it's an environmentally risky mine that really creates, you know, relatively few jobs and for a short period of time, if there's anywhere the word job might appear in that press release, he'll be all over it and supporting it. So, yeah, I mean, this is what he's going to run for re-election on, and he's hoping people will buy it.
Well, let's take a call on this. Let's go to Karen in Egg Harbor. Hi, Karen.
Hi. I have kind of a twofold question for the gentleman who is speaking. He just said, you know, why are we letting developing countries be our supplier of what needs to be mined in Wisconsin? What about solar energy, that we've let China become the lead force in this? Let's Wisconsin be the first step to solar energy and put those factories up in the north if that's where they need them. And my second one is, I don't understand why hotels, campgrounds, charter boat people, all the shops that rely on tourism, why they have not gathered together and say, what about us? We're here. You're going to probably destroy our income stream by the pollution that will be created by these mines.
Keen, you can go ahead with Karen.
Well, one of the folks who run the Pure Michigan program are kicking our butts in terms of drawing tourists to the UP, yet they're mining up there. So I don't think, those two things are incompatible. The mines cover really small areas. I think we can work on solar, but you also have to remember that China, in addition to maybe having a lead in solar, they have four times as many people as we do, and they're also a huge leader in terms of particulate and coal. I mean, if you're going to wear a white shirt in Beijing, you're going to wash it the next day because it's going to be gray. You're going to wear a mask. The pollution over there is terrible. Yeah, they have to explore some alternatives to that. We've done a much better job, and I think I don't think we should feel like we're behind China in that regard.
Well, let's move on to another issue. The Assembly passed a bill that would allow anybody of any age, even toddlers, if you go by the letter of the law, to hunt with a mentor. The vote was 57-32, four Democrats siding with most Republicans and three Republicans voting with most Democrats. So, Ed, what do you make of this mentored hunting?
Well, everyone should be aware that currently children as young as 10 under current law can go out and hunting in a mentored, supervised situation under the current law. So we're talking about amending the law in a way that would theoretically allow children younger than 10 to hunt. I have a lot of interest in things I love that I want to pass down to my kids and share with my children. I happen to enjoy a good glass of scotch. I'd love to be able to sit around with my son and pour us each a glass and sit and talk and enjoy the fire. But I'm not going to do it when my son is 5 years old. And I can understand people enjoy hunting and they want to share that experience with their children and they want to pass down that experience, and that's great. But you don't do it when your kid's 5 years old. I think that this is just a misguided attempt to try and say you're something in favor of gun ownership or hunting rights. But really, without stopping to ask, what are we doing here? Do we really want parents to make a decision, an unwise decision, to take a child younger than 10 out with a dangerous weapon? And do we really want to accept that sort of risk of potential disaster here?
Let's bring in Luke in Evansville, Indiana. Hi, Luke.
Good morning. I like to comment first that I'm a hunter. I'm a gun owner. I'm not against guns in any way, but all I see here is just a nod to the NRA. If you're going to allow a child of any age go hunting, you might as well put them in a car at age 10 and say, hey, as long as I'm next to you, you can drive around town. And I don't find this to be a very wise decision.
Keen, is this a nod to the NRA, National Rifle
Association? I don't know if it's a nod to the NRA, but it just, you know, I know the people who it's coming from, and it's too much. I have to agree with Ed. Now, look, I don't know that you're going to have five-year-olds shooting people, but if you go out in the woods, it's cold. You have to sit for a long time. You have to sit still for a long time. You know, it's just not an appropriate place, just like the Scotch example, for children. And I would really hate to have to see parents do it. I can imagine an 8 or 9 year old who really, really wants to go hunting with daddy now under pressure, whereas dad could say, yeah, you're not 10 yet. You can't go with. I just don't see a place. You know, fishing is great. That's a great place to take a fidgety kid. I just don't think there's any good reason to go below 10.
And this strikes out the rule that a hunter and mentor have only one weapon between them. So there is that issue as well, more weapons.
Yeah, below 10, I mean, you know, if anybody is involved in the sport, the recoil on weapons that would be required to shoot a deer are pretty, you're really pushing kids to go forward. That's an age where they should be using a BB gun, maybe some small game hunting, but I think just eliminating the current law. The current law is fine. It's not a lot of gain, and I think it really, I don't know, taking a child out and asking them to sit for a long time probably sours them more on the experience than it will excite them about it.
And we're going to stop here for just a moment. We have about 20 seconds left, and I just wanted to get each of you to say a few words about UW-Superior announcing it's doing away with 9 majors. Ed, go ahead.
Well, if you're going to decrease funding for higher education, if you're not going to invest in higher education as a way for the state to compete and keep its smart people home, then you're going to have to make drastic cuts, and that's what we're seeing.
And Keen, final thoughts to you.
Well, shortly after I graduated from the UW Business School, they made a major overhaul and cut dozens and dozens of programs, and that helped them regain their national ranking. I think a small school like Superior really should focus on a few areas where they can be very good in, and spreading themselves too thin is probably a bad idea. So I like the idea of narrowing things down and being a niche school.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Keen Winters is a small business owner from Schofield and the coordinator of Center Right Coalition of WASA. And Ed Filone is an associate professor of law at Marquette University. This Week in Review was produced by Bill Martins. We had technical direction from executive producer Michelle Johnson. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.